right now we're going to try and show you some things that God has shown to us. And I think what I'd like to do is get right in to Populous and tell them what we have. This is astounding.
We have a screen image.
This is astounding. Yes. Yes.
I'm going to go into. If you go to anthonypatch.com, and I'm sure you've all been there because you purchased your tickets, and you notice that the September issue and the August issue of Entangled magazine had this rather odd arrangement of diamonds on the cover of that magazine for both months. Obviously, we did that for a reason. I'll tell you the inside story of that before I put this up. The reason that we put that on the cover is we were sending a message to a certain community that Kathleen is going to reveal to you today. We were testing the waters spiritually to see what sort of reaction we would receive, if any, by posting that in the open, as they say in encrypted communications, in the clear. We posted it in the clear. We didn't try to hide anything from the spirit world. This was early on in our first foray into geomancy. I've written in Entangled magazine about necromancy. There is a rather extensive article on necromancy that I put together in which, pardon me, I packed into that article all of the forms of geomancy, necromancy, spatulomancy, aquamancy, aeromancy that I could put my hands on, and did it in a very succinct way. And I encourage you to look at Entangled magazine for that longer explanation. But I bring in three examples of mathematicians in the modern era who openly admitted that they were in communications with spirits to obtain their mathematical formulas, their geometric shapes in the modern era. And all of that has been applied to modern science. All of the disciplines of science are utilizing the mathematics, including economic science, using the science of the mathematics derived from these modern day mathematicians who are communicating with spirits. I give you that as a foundation to Populous, because what the modern day mathematicians were doing was necromancy, identical to what Kelly and Dee were doing in the late 1500s, in which they were deriving in both an alphabet and a numerical system of communication with the higher levels of fallen angels to obtain specific scientific information related to alchemy, the transmutation of metals, often referred to as turning lead into gold. Nostradamus was involved in alchemy to a high degree, as were Kelly and Dee. Modern popular culture wants to focus on transmutation of metals, and they want to talk about, you know, the lore, the myths of turning lead into gold. There's so much more to it than that. But modern science not only has the mathematics derived from these occult practices, but they also have the empirical studies, the empirical, experimental, data-driven processes of the linear progression of scientific research that we see today is all based upon alchemy. Alchemy is based upon geomancy and necromancy. What the Egyptians, Sumerians, Babylonians, Romans, and Greeks all practiced was geomancy and the other forms of those communication systems with spirits. But we're not taught that in high school and university. we're given the lead into gold type of examples. We hear in university about the Hermetic tablets. There are over 300 Hermetic tablets, but usually they just focus on one, the Emerald tablet that allegedly contains the formula, if you will, to achieve immortality. Look at today's genetic research into the digitizing of DNA, the sequencing of DNA. The reason that they're breaking DNA down into ones and zeros, and also into the ternary, which is the balanced ternary of 0, 1, and 2, or the other form, -1, 0, and 1. The reason they're digitizing DNA into a binary or trinary code is because it is based upon communications with the fallen angels. The fallen angels told them how to manipulate DNA. Once you transmutate DNA into ones and zeros, into mathematical formula. The mathematical formula, the algebraic, the Boolean math, results in geometric shapes. The geometric shapes result in the helical structure of our DNA, and also to the discussion of the third strand of DNA. All of this is communication with fallen angels for the purpose of saying, here's your mathematical system to build your reality, to change your DNA, to run your computational quantum processors, to explore through particle accelerators the origins of the universe and life itself, to penetrate the veil to the singularity, to the starting point of all creation, to the definition point of reality. Fallen angels want to deceive people into believing that mathematics is not only a form of communication, but a way to create a new reality. Thus, we have augmented reality, virtual reality, computer games, and the sentient world simulation, all built upon mathematics as a system of communication with fallen angels, providing information that is considered to be forbidden knowledge. That's where we're at, folks. So now we're going to talk about Populus.
Okay, can we bring up that slide for Populus, please? So I'm just going to read a little bit about Populus and give them some background on it. It's one of the 16 geomantic figures, and it holds a unique position and title of judge. Populus in its Latin means people. It can also refer to congregation, assembly, group. It could also, if you were looking down at it from above, it would resemble a crowd of people, or if you connect the diamonds together, it would represent a meeting house of people where they discuss matters within. Populus is described as the most stable figure in all of geomancy and preserves everything around it. It is entirely reflective and takes in whatever is around it and pushes it on, absorbing the influences of its neighbors. It's good with good figures and bad with bad figures, especially favorable for reflection and meditation on matters already known, as well as preserving the status quo of things. I found in my prayer time not long ago, as I was studying geomancy at a very, very basic elementary level, I was drawn to this one particular figure, and I didn't know why. And so I began to do some study on it. And what I found astounded me. Again, Populus is a type of geomantic figure that it's for situations involving reflection and introspection and agreement. And it's unfavorable for any kind of directed action or solitary endeavor. And it is paired up with another geomantic figure in the chart, typically, and that is Via. And if you want to go down to the next one, which is called the Way. So I began to look at Populus. If you want to just, will you lose that if we go back to the judge? I mean, is it easy to just go back and forth between the camera so that I can show them? Right here. Okay. So this is my real rough drawing of Populus. But if we look at Populus as for what it represents in and of itself judge. It's also, it's neutral. So whatever comes to bear on it, it can be positive or negative. It can excite or it can calm down. And it's indicative of, according to Geomancers, it's influenced and has its properties also in water, which is very reflective. It is meant to represent people. So as I was praying one morning, and this absolutely blew my mind, and I said, and I struggled, I told Anthony, I'm struggling with this because, you know, if I say something and it's not right, I don't want to be blasphemous. And yet I can't ignore the voice of the Holy Spirit when he teaches me things and I need to bring them forward, especially in the days that we live in. We talked about the art of war and you were joking with me about being a spy, but I sort of felt like I was given the opportunity to go behind the enemy lines and be able to see what the enemy knew. And so the Holy Spirit said to me about this. He said, Kathleen, he said, this is what Jesus wrote in the sand when he was in the temple. And I said, I didn't understand what he meant. He said, this is what he was writing in the sand at the temple. He said, think about it. And he laid it out very, very systematically,
right,
very logically. He said, the Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus with this woman caught in adultery. Now, they didn't bring her partner. They just brought her. They were coming to him to trick him. They were trying to set him up as a judge to bring, you know, to pass on this woman. And so he sat there and he was drawing things in the sand. Now, these Pharisees and Sadducees were taught in these magic art schools. And, you know, the Jewish people might take issue with that, but that's what Kabbalah is all about, people. Kabbalah is all about the esoteric. They have profaned the laws of God by taking in black magic and trying to mix it with what is holy. And what they have on their hands right now is an incredible mess and a lack of understanding of the true knowledge, though they profess to think that they know these things and they don't. So he said to me, he said he went and he wrote these things in the sand. And he was speaking, Jesus was speaking to them in their own language. Because don't forget, they brought with him not just this woman in adultery, they brought a whole angry crowd. You know, we see a lot of setups today happening in the United States and the world. We see a lot of false flags being brought before us where they are saying that, you know, people are running into crowds of people with trucks, you know, things are being blown up. And you know what? It's not happening. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's green screens, it's actors, it's crisis actors, people. And you've got to understand that there is a full court press underway right now to try and imprison humanity. But I don't want to get off on that too much. I want to just stick to what I'm trying to say here. So these Pharisees and Sadducees were trained in these schools. Now, you also have to understand that Daniel, in the book of Daniel, he was trained in these schools. He was in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. Yes, the Chaldeans, the Assyrians, and all of this. Yet he held true to his faith in God. God saved him, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego from you know, the fire, and gave them great favor in the court of the king. And in the end, the king believed the God of Daniel. because God's power was able to keep him. That's that same power that's going to come to us as we go in this afternoon and go more detailed. This information right here, you know, if people wanted to say, oh, Kathleen, that's just conjecture, you know, well, it could be, maybe, the only ones who will prove if this is true or not are those who are committed to Satan himself. Because Satan knows what Jesus wrote in the sand. And when they go to him now and they say, listen, this woman, Kathleen Urquhart, professes to think that she knows, you know, what Jesus wrote in the sand, and she stuck populace on the wall. Is that correct? He's going to say yes. Because think about it. So these Pharisees come, they bring this woman, throw her before him. They're trying to trick him, getting him to judge. So he writes a figure that would only be known to them because they studied this magic art. That's not saying that Jesus operated in black magic, but he knows everything. And at the core of some of that was knowledge that he, Satan, obtained from God. Because Daniel knew about it. And I am even saying right now, the book of Daniel is being opened. You know, he said, Daniel, close up the vision. Close the book up for now, for it's for yet an appointed time. That appointed time is now. We are here with a military mindset, with a military attitude and focus. And why is that? Because the times have come where Jesus now is in heaven being prepared by the Holy Spirit for war. And if we who are his children have the same Holy Spirit within us, we too should be feeling and understanding the times that we live in, to know that we too are being prepared for war. And again, it's not with weapons of warfare. I put that on my website, the first page of my website. You know, what we have are weapons that are strong, that are powerful to the pulling down of strongholds. They're not the weapons of warfare that we fight with. It's spiritual, and that's where we're going. That's where we're going. So let's look at this more. Why would Jesus write this in the sand? Well, first of all, he had an angry mob around him, and we know that populace is neutral. We know that it can calm things down, like water. Water can either be very calm or swift moving. You know, when it's paired up with via, it is the opposites attract. So this right here, representing the position as judge in the 16 geomantic figures, water being reflective, causing people to think about it. This is what I envisioned after he wrote this. What he was saying silently without having to say anything at all. And that is, you're coming to me as judge. You're expecting me. You want me to judge this woman that you've just brought before me. By representing water, he's saying, I want you to think long and hard about what you're about to do. You think long and hard about what you're getting ready to do. And then he said that because the people that were gathered around had murder in their hearts. They were an angry crowd. They had stones in their hands. They wanted to stone this woman caught in adultery. And he calmed them right down, which is what populace does to the people. Again, it also represents a meeting place where people gather to discuss matters. If I could encourage you, you know, I am not trained in geomancy. I am a woman who has coffee with the Lord, and from that come amazing revelations. I can only say to you, take it to him yourself. And to those who are operating in the satanic realm, take it to Satan himself and ask him. Just ask him, and he'll let you know. But this is what I understand. And if you go in, here's the interesting thing with, you know, on the computer, if you type in the word populist, you're going to have all these little pretty trees and leaves pop up because, you know, AI doesn't want you knowing about this. You need to type in geomancy populist or populist geomancy and read what you will on it, because it will show you and you'll begin to see the picture come together. You know, I wanted to try and present this in a way that you could see what it's saying. And but I think it requires a little bit more study, but not studying the arts per se, just study this one particular figure. If I were to cover this up, these four diamonds right here would be Via, which is what Populus is paired up with. Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting because Jesus calls himself, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Via, which naturally in their geomancy science will be paired together with this one, is called the way. So
it's always a counterfeit of what God created.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
And everything is a counterfeit.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to see if I have something else here that I could tell them about Populus.
Let me just give them some context
while
you're doing that. Mm-hmm. It is extraordinarily controversial, this concept of Jesus communicating rather than just sort of idly doodling in the sand, as is often portrayed to us, that he was just absent-minded. And he was not fearful of what was going on. And he sent the Pharisees on their way. The older ones, the wiser ones, the schooled ones of the Pharisees left first because they knew what Jesus had inscribed, had prescribed in the sand. They knew that he knew the language and was using their own language to communicate to them, to demonstrate, I know what you know. He knew the game. You've heard me say on the radio, how do you beat the game? People will say you need to know the rules. That is absolutely correct. And you need to know that it is a game in the first place. And if you discover that it's a game, picture the Matrix. Picture what's going on in society right now. You realize that you are a pawn and that you and I, okay, we are in this together. We're being played in a game. And once you realize that you are immersed in a game and you're being manipulated, I would venture to say that you get rather angry, just like I got very angry. We hear the trite phrase, people need to wake up. Well, what are you waking up to? You're waking up to the fact that we are immersed in a game and we are showing you the rules of the game. Not all of them, because we're not going to go into, you know, becoming practitioners. But the Pharisees knew that Jesus knew the rules and knew that it was a game and that the game was being turned on them. And following the elder Pharisees who knew this were the younger ones who, I venture to say, left in puzzlement, wondering, why aren't we stoning this man?
Well, you know, I've read different schools of thought on this, and people have all said, you know, I've heard some people say, oh, Jesus wrote their name in the sand, Jesus, you know, did something that was known only to them, and I'm like, not that I know this, it's like, yes, he was. He was talking to them in their own native language. Yep. Which the general population doesn't know. Just like us, the general population does not know about geomancy. And it's good that they don't. I mean,
right.
It, you know, if it were knowledge that God wanted everybody to have, then we would have it. As we go on this afternoon and we go on talking about the augmentations in our brains in relation to what's happening with the elevation in computer technology, you know, then we will get to a place where we will know all things. And like Jesus, we will know these things.
Right. We're going to get into that in the afternoon.
But I wanted to just take people back to the Bible real quick because I'll leave the science to you. I love learning from you. You are an awesome teacher. And I'm going to stick to the spiritual side of things. Just a woman who has coffee with the Lord. That's it. Okay. The story of the woman caught in adultery. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early in the morning, he went back into the temple courts. All of the people came to him and he sat down to teach them. And the scribes and Pharisees, taught in the ancient black magic schools, brought to him a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before them and said, Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commands us to stone such a woman. What do you say? They said this to test Jesus in order to have a basis for accusing him. So they came to him with murder and trickery in their hearts, which are the calling cards of Satan. keep that in mind. And Jesus even said later on, you are of your father, the devil. Because if you knew me, if you knew the Father, you would accept me.
But they don't know God.
They don't.
They don't know the Father. They know Satan, who's
right.
who they worship, and therefore they don't recognize God's own Son.
Exactly. So they said this to test him in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and began to write on the ground with his finger in the sand. When they continued to question him, he straightened up and said to them, whoever is without sin among you, let him be the first to cast a stone at her. And again, he bent down and wrote on the ground. When they had heard this, they began to go away one by one. Now you can just envision what's happening. The crowd's off behind the Pharisees who are standing there with their
highest look
and fancy robes and knowing all, you know, representing the knowledge of all things. And they're coming because they hate Jesus. They're just looking for an opportunity to get rid of him. But they know and recognize that there's power and wisdom in his words. And so he didn't want to say too much. And he knew that the crowd was very excitable. And so he brought his influence of calmness over the crowd. But before he did that, he laid it out in something that only they could understand that had so many deep meanings.
That only the Pharisees understood.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Perhaps only the elders.
They learned this in their schools.
Right.
They learned this, so they knew what this meant.
And yet the crowd had no knowledge of this that we're able to understand at this point.
No. And again, keep in mind, it's paired up with via, the way. So it represented Jesus as being the way. Again, if I were to hide that, this is via right here before. He is the way.
And he was saying
and he was the judge. But he didn't come out and say judge because they were waiting for him to do that and they would have pounced upon him right at that moment.
Exactly.
So he said, okay, I am judge. I am judge. And you better think long and hard about what you're getting ready to do to this woman.
And why was he using a secret language that the people in the crowd did not know that it was even a language? What was he trying to do for the benefit of the Pharisees?
That's a good question. First of all, I think he was showing himself on equal par with them in terms of knowledge.
Yep.
You know, he was able to exhibit his power and influence over the crowd with the words that he was going to speak next. He gave them the out that they were seeking because they needed a safe face at this point. And quite frankly, it wasn't his time yet. It wasn't his time yet. So with just a few words, a few very, very wise words that were spoken for the crowd's instant, you know, for the crowd's
benefit,
thank you.
And to calm them.
And to calm them down and to give these Pharisees a way out because now they know he's getting ready to translate, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. There's no argument there. There's just no argument there.
He was causing them, first of all, he was saving face
mm-hmm.
because he respected their position in terms of their influence over the crowd,
yep.
And he was more concerned about the crowd than he was about the Pharisees.
But he was more concerned about the woman who was about to lose
absolutely.
Her life in a trumped-up charge, basically.
Absolutely. And yet he was causing, by showing them this language,
mm-hmm.
that allowed them secretly to save face,
mm-hmm.
but then inspired them to become introspective with those words.
Exactly, exactly.
To look within themselves,
mm-hmm.
examine themselves.
Yes.
And that's where we're going this afternoon.
It's the season. We're getting ready to enter into the Jewish holy days, where, you know, from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur is that 10-day window, if you will, where they call it a reprieve, where you are going to look at your life and ask yourself, have I been living it? And, you know, according to God's laws.
And we would suggest.
The Torah, as they will say.
This applies to the Gentiles.
It does. It
a
does.
Time of introspection.
It does. And you and I spoke, and we had another. I love God. It's just like he's coming so fast with things. We're hearing things like the fullness of the Gentiles, and everybody believes that that's a number. But fullness is not a number. It's a state. It's a state. think of like a flower that comes in, like a rose that comes into its fullness. It's the rose, it's a stem, it's, you put it in water, it's all closed up, and then over time it starts to open up into its fullness. This is exactly what he meant by the fullness of the Gentiles. It's not a number of people. Everybody's waiting, you know, okay, is there, you know, how many millions of people are going to come in? No. It's coming in to the fullness, the knowledge, the understanding of who you are in who you are in him. It's the knowledge that's going to come when we begin to seek him in these days with all of our heart, because we have to. It's going to determine whether or not you are a volunteer in God's army or if you're going to be a soldier. You know, there are a lot of similarities. There's a lot of language that's spoken the same, but there's a big difference between being a volunteer and being a soldier. You're trained differently. You may be 100% on board with the mission statement, the values, the goals, the directions, everything. And you give of your time and you give of your treasures and you're working toward the same outcome. But when the battle comes, a volunteer says, I'm going home. You know, they can just walk away and say, I'm out of here. Whereas when you're a soldier, you go in and you know that your life might be required of you. But the good news is it's only appointed for men to die once and then victory. So with that in mind, I got off on a little tangent. But keep in mind, fullness is not a number, it's a state. And we are, as Gentiles, coming into that state of fullness. And when we open ourselves to be able to know and understand what the Holy Spirit is speaking, we're going to understand these things too. And we're not going to be so fascinated by it and go, yeah. Ooh, and ah. It's just going to be, okay, we get that. We get that.
The fullness of the Gentiles relates directly to the opening of the book of Daniel.
Yes, it does. And that, I believe, is what's happening now. It's the times that we live in. You and I, we just got finished watching on Kabod.com a four-part series on the coming of Moshiach. And it was very eye-opening to see what they're looking for in terms of the returning of the Messiah. And they even sense that it is close.
They call Jesus Christ a perpetrator.
I know.
It's,
you know, there are rules in place. There is, there are things that are in place right now. They are blinded. And I think I blame a lot of that on Kabbalah. I do. I believe that it has a very nefarious side. I mean, if we take it just to the United States, look at the people that are practicing it here, that are openly practicing it here. People like Madonna, Hollywood. You know, and yeah, they are the epitome of righteousness, aren't they?
Yes.
You know, so we need to look at, my mother used to say to me as a child, she said, Kathleen, show me the company you keep and I'll tell you what you are. And I used to be like, oh, you know, this is typically if there were friends that I was going out with that she didn't want me to be with, you know, she'd say, show me the company you keep and I'll tell you what you are. And we can carry that over in this realm too. And, you know, just take a look at the people that are practicing it. There's a great amount of hubris involved in that.
Oh, the sheer arrogance.
You know, the we know everything and you know nothing. We are the authority. You are the peasants. You do as I say. I shall lead. You shall follow. You know, I will run the world. You will be my servant. And the answer is no. No. That's just not going to happen. So, let me read from Ellicott's Commentary for English Readers what they said. The verse read, but Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground, or more exactly was writing on the ground. It is an imperfect of the continued action, and it points to narrator's vivid remembrance of the scene. What precise meaning we are to attach to this action is and must remain uncertain. Why must it remain uncertain? It doesn't have to. Any inquiry as to what he wrote is excluded by the fact that the narrative would certainly have recorded it had it been known. And though the writing on the sand was practiced in the rabbinic schools, this writing was on the pavement of the temple. Did Jesus not spend most of his time teaching in the temple? And had people like Gamaliel listening to them listening to him. I mean, he had some of the most notable rabbis listening to him as a child teaching in the temple. So, let me just finish this here. An alternative interpretation may be suggested that they had quoted the law and asked for his opinion. They were themselves the interpreters of the law. He claimed no such office. He stoops down and writes, and the action imitates that the law of God was written on tablets of stone, and its decrees were immutable. So, and it says, they, by their technical interpretation and tradition, were making it of none effect. This is one interpretation by Ellicott. But again, you know, it comes down to him speaking to them in the language that they understood, the language that they studied in. It had demonic origins. I think we've put that together quite clearly today to show that.
And I would offer this. He wasn't writing in the sand. He was writing on the stone of the temple.
Well, there's sand that, you know, obviously the sand would blow in, and, you know, they would have to sweep it away. And part, I've even heard interpretations that they purposely would write things in the sand so that the sand would do that once a judgment was pronounced, that it would sort of be erased after that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, the good news is he came to that woman. He was, you know, he did not judge her. He simply said to her, "Where are your accusers? Woman, where are your accusers?" And she said, "There's no one here." He said, "Then go and sin no more."
Does she not represent us?
Yeah. Yes. Of course. Of course. So,
and
that was one of my amazing revelations. And
he was foretelling the future.
In what way?
Because he was saying, "Via, I am the way."
Right.
He was saying to them, "The future is me,
mm-hmm.
not Satan.
Mm-hmm.
I am the way to eternal life,
mm-hmm.
not Satan."
Mm-hmm. But I think what's the most exciting thing about all of this is that when the powers that be on Satan's side mm-hmm. go to him and say, "Wait a minute, you know, there's this little nobody from, you know,
there's this little one
on earth who says that, you know, God told her this. Is this true?"
Yeah.
You know, when he knows, it's going to shudder. It's going to send shudders through the demonic realm. And it'll filter down.
Yeah.
Because it's going to make him realize that he's going to ramp up his efforts now. And that's happening all over the world. We see the ramping up of the, you know, the powers that be, the cabal, if you will. And it's interesting how we use that word in conjunction with Kabbalah, because these practitioners of this black magic in modern day times are these world leaders. They are these people, and they are going to be made aware of this only in the sense that this indicates that that knowledge is being made to ordinary everyday people now. Because
if the book of Daniel is opening,
mm-hmm.
that is sending shockwaves through the black arts,
absolutely.
The mystical arts,
absolutely.
Those in what they believe are in a leadership and a power position, for them to realize that we, as just Gentiles, if you will,
mm-hmm.
average people.
That's all Jesus ever used. That's all God ever called was average people.
Joe Bag of Donuts. We're realizing that the book of Daniel's being opened.
Yes.
And there is a manifestation of that that is occurring to people like you and me. We're not the only ones.
The augmentation has begun.
And that's what we're going to talk about a
exactly.
little bit later.
Exactly.
The augmentation of God's
and
people.
And how that happens to God's people. Because unfortunately, there are a lot of people that believe that they are God's chosen people. They said a sinner's prayer or something like it, and believe that they are, you know, almost automatically in. They're in the Christian club. They said the sinner's prayer and they're in the Christian club. Now, I don't want to knock that, because years ago I said the sinner's prayer too. And when we go to the next slide, I'm going to get a cup of coffee, folks. I need a cup of coffee. We are going to see that it could be a stepping stone or a stumbling block. And so to that end, give me just 5 minutes to be able to go. Anthony's going to read something about spies, but this is pretty profound. This is pretty profound in that it is going to tell Satan and his minions that God is on the move. Things are happening. His people are being changed. His people are being empowered. His people are hearing his voice. The troops are amassing on the Christian side. And the battle lines have been drawn. The line is in the sand. You know, one of the other things that I find fascinating in scripture is when they're talking about the power of God, and God draws a line himself in the sand. And he says to the oceans, "You shall come this far and no further. Your proud waves will come this far and no further." And isn't that interesting when we look now at all of the hurricanes and all of the horrible things that are happening in our world? I told you earlier that the demonic realm tends to go into arid places, but there are also demonic realms that oversee the natural elements. If I can remember, let me just see. And this is true. You know, it all, once you start to see it, it's everywhere. It is absolutely everywhere. And you'll see where they get their nefarious triangles. So we've got, I have to put my little thing here. Thank you. I'm glad that I don't know this by heart.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Okay. This symbol is Earth. This symbol is air. This symbol is fire, and this symbol is water. There are principalities and powers in the demonic realm involved in all of this. And as I was just saying about the Lord taking his hand and drawing a line in the sand to say to the oceans and their proud waves, "You can come this far and no further," God put a boundary. Satan and his demons, the demons of the earth, the air, the fire, and water are transgressing the natural laws of God and bringing incredible hurricanes against not just the United States, but all around the world in the air, you know, the spraying, the hurricanes, tornadoes, you know, and fires, what's happening out west with the fires. So these demons are really ramping up all over in all of their realms. They're on high alert. They are on attack. It's full spectrum dominance right now.
It is.
But God has a standard. Don't be afraid. He's got a standard. And to those people who are caught in these, you're seeing your house is being destroyed by or consumed by fire, or your whole life has been wiped out by water, hold on. Hold fast to your faith, because you're going to come through this. You're going to be those soldiers. You're going to be those soldiers, because you're going to see that he's your all in all. And we can tell by the enemy. You know, when you're involved in war, you have to study the enemy. You have to study what he's doing. Study what's happening in the water. Study what's happening in the air. Study what's happening on the earth with the earthquakes and the rumblings that are happening everywhere. Study what's happening with the fires, not just in the United States, but all over. It's his trademark. It's what he's doing. And, you know, shame on those people. Shame on our soldiers and our people that we've trained in this country, in the United States, the country that has taken everything out into the rest of the world. You know, it's an interesting prospect. Think about it. The United States brings in immigrants from all over the world. We train them in this demonic sort of mess, and then we send them back out into the world. We are a nation that produces nothing but disgusting pornography. Our young women don't dress like young women anymore. They dress like whores. They do. And let's just call it for what it is. They don't dress like young women. They don't have modesty anymore. Everything is show everything and entice men and lead them into sin. And then men, I'm not going to say that, you know, men don't have their responsibility, but speaking from a woman's perspective, you know, I observe this and I see this. And so we're in a place right now where we have a chance to turn it around. We're not going to stop what's happening in the world. The world is meeting its end. And people don't want to hear that. But this is the end times. This is it. And there's no pulling any punches. There's no hiding it. There's no anything anymore. It just is what it is. So we are in rescue and recovery mode right now. We're throwing life preservers to people and we're saying, grab hold of it. And if not, you're going to drown, you're going to die. And so this is a very sobering message. You know, don't get me wrong. I love being a woman. I'm not trying to insult women, but I want to see them raise the standard. I want to see them raise the standard. What you have is private. You don't need to show it to everybody. You don't need to go out into this world and copy and emulate some of these people that Hollywood is raising up to be your role models. They're not role models, people. They're going to lead you right down the path to hell. So, I don't know, that was a tangent. I didn't mean to go off in that. But to see the full spectrum of all that is going on, it's evidence. It is. And, you know, there's more things that God has shown us. And I'm going to go grab that probably cold cup of coffee right now and let you talk to the geomantic side, spies, and then go to what you saw. We can end out geomancy with the amazing, amazing.
You need to read it. So pull that
out. Sure, I'll pull that out for you. Get coffee, and I'll let you read about spies.